And now, Audio Theater Central.
Oh, hi there. I'm John Avery Whittaker. But most folks around here call me Whit.
My name is Finian Jones, and you are?
Hello, I'm Dave Arnold, your host for Focus on the Family Radio Theater.
Hey everybody, I'm JD.
And I'm Andrew.
And I'm Roy. We're your hosts for Audio Theater Central.
Welcome to episode 2!
In this episode, we're going to review the latest production from Focus on the Family Radio Theater, The Screwtape Letters.
Dun 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 dun. Oh, we also, on lighter topics, have an interview with Nathan Hubler of Adventures in Odyssey. And I think someone is going to be doing a newscast.
Oh yeah, that would be me.
Oh, yes, of course. Well, how could we forget Roy? I mean, he reminds us often.
He takes his job seriously, doesn't he, Andrew? Oh, go ahead, Roy. The floor is yours.
Thank you very much. You're too kind. Focus on the Family has partnered with Christian Book Distributors to offer high-quality single-episode downloads of Adventures in Odyssey. You can find out more at www.christianbook.com. In other news, Focus on the Family Radio Theater has returned to the airwaves with their production of C.S. Lewis's The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, kicking off the relaunch. In Lamplighter Theater-related news, we have teamed up with the great folks there to offer you, our wonderful ATC listeners, a fantastic discount on regularly priced merchandise from the Lamplighter Theater store. It's very easy. All you do is use the code LAMP67 when checking out, and you'll receive 15% off your purchase. You can use this code in the online store or with phone orders. Again, the code is LAMP67 for 15% off of all items, excluding sale items. This is a limited time offer, so be sure to take advantage of it right away. And that's it for the news for this episode. I'm Roy, reporting for Audio Theater Central.
In a moment, we'll chat with Nathan Hubler about what's going on in Odyssey.
But first, let's review Radio Theater's most recent production, The Screwtape Letters.
Well, in 2009, Focus on the Family Radio Theater released The Screwtape Letters, a dramatization of the book by C.S. Lewis. Roy, why don't you go ahead and give us the summary of that?
The Screwtape Letters are wildly comic, deadly serious, and strikingly original. C.S. Lewis's masterpiece is one of the most engaging accounts of temptation and the triumph over it ever written. In this audio dramatization, original music and a full cast bring the correspondence of the worldly wise demon Screwtape and his nephew Wormwood to life.
Now, this is not your typical radio theater production. It lacked a lot of the drama intrigue that accompanies most of their productions. With that said, it's not a typical story that Focus adapts either. The original work is a collection of fictional letters, not dialogue or plot twist. So in that respect, I believe Paul McCusker did a superb job in adapting C.S. Lewis's work into this audio form.
Yes, I too think that it was very well done, taking 31 letters from a senior demon to a younger, inexperienced tempter and trying to impart to him all the wisdom of a long and sort of diabolical career of tempting human beings and getting to know humanity. It's really incredible just the fact that he was able to take it and make it a compelling, interesting audio drama and turning the letters into a conversation. It was really, really awesome.
Right. And having said all that, I must add that this production seems also to have been directed at a much older audience than the previous releases from Radio Theater.
Probably the oldest that I've ever heard of anything was the Father Gilbert series, where they would come on and actually say 14 and older for some of them, I think. You know, so that's the most advanced I've ever heard. But this one, they didn't give that kind of disclaimer because I think it's kind of obvious, really, that it's a target for probably even older teens and adults. And children wouldn't be able to follow it.
Yeah, young children wouldn't be able to grasp the concepts discussed or follow the storyline such as it is.
Because there is a background story, too, of the intrigue of what's going on between Wormwood and Screwtape. But we don't want to go into that very much or we'll spoil it for you.
And we don't want to do that.
No, we Yeah, we don't want to do that at all.
I do think that teens and adults could greatly benefit from this drama if they listen intently to the issues that Lewis addresses and then begin a spiritual self-examination.
I don't think this is something you can listen to at all with the idea of, I'm going to listen to Screwtape Letters to be entertained for 5 hours. It's not the attitude you want to approach this with. I kind of knew what was going on because I had been paying attention to it a lot before it released. So the first time I heard it, I didn't look at it that way. So it really helped in keeping my interest because I was listening to what they were saying, not waiting for action or anything like that. I was actually like paying attention to what was going on and thinking about what Screwtape was saying and trying to apply it and all that kind of stuff. So it was very interesting.
Right. I first listened to Screwtape and I was listening to it for an entertainment point of view. I was on a road trip, actually. So it didn't quite appeal to me like on the road trip, as you mentioned, an entertainment aspect. But once you sat down and listened to it and really got into it, it really made an impact.
Yeah, and I had the similar experience. I had to just sit and force myself to listen from a different perspective rather than trying to follow an intriguing story. But overall, I think the production is very eye-opening and very thought-provoking.
But that being said, with having to approach it with a different mindset, it's kind of like what Paul McCusker himself said in interviews that were on the website before it came out, that most people think of C.S. Lewis as sort of highbrow and kind of like classical music type crowd, but this production, in his words, came out to be more like rock and roll, which is kind of true because he took it and, well, obviously he dramatized it, but he brought it to a level to where you can listen to it and be compelled, and it's not like, if somebody was just reading this, I would probably fall asleep, but having turned it into a conversation and everything, it really gets you to approach it with that different mindset and listen with a different ear, I guess.
It was kind of weird at first, though, like you're saying, listening at a different mindset, trying to get your mind like in a different world point of view, too. You know, you're like coming at this from Satan, basically. Your point of view is first coming in the story, and that's kind of weird to do. Not your normal audio drama point of view, but...
Yeah, and it's not what you would expect from Focus on the Family Radio Theater, because as far as I know, every previous release has been... From that other aspect of entertainment, yes, they do have a theme or a good moral to the story, but they're not as deep as far as theologically or psychologically.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. Probably the closest that anything ever came to that would have been the Father Gilbert Mysteries again.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that.
I mean, you could make an argument that the Amazing Grace series was compelling, but in a different sort of way, I think. More emotionally compelling than this was really spiritually compelling.
Yeah, it's harder to get emotionally involved in this one. There's not that much.
Right. The brief snippets that we see of John and Dorothy, that enables us to make a little bit more human connection to it, I think. But trying to look at it from the mindset of...
You're a demon.
Yeah, the way Satan is trying to attack and stuff is so backward from anything that we hold as true and right and anything like that, because referring to God and his angels as the enemy, referring to Satan as our father below and all of that is just, honestly, a couple times I was like, okay, this is really creepy.
Yeah, it really brought home the fact, the reality of how real our enemy really is. I mean, Satan is a powerful being and we really have to ward ourselves against his attacks.
Right, and speaking on how powerful Satan really is, it reminds me of a story of a young man who went to his pastor and told him that he had proof in the Bible that Satan was getting more powerful and powerful. The pastor said, really, show me where, and he took him in the Bible and showed him, you know, the beginning, Satan was likened to as a serpent, and then later on he's likened to as a lion, and then finally in Revelation he's likened to as a dragon. And the young man said, that's proof that Satan is getting more powerful and powerful. And the pastor said, yes, but all I need is one scripture in the Bible. And he took him to Psalm 91:13, where it says, thou shalt trample upon the lion and the adder. The young lion and the dragon shalt thou trample under thy feet.
And you know what's really incredible about all of that is the reason that we're able to do that is because of the sacrifice of Christ. And that's really what this whole deal is talking about. It's talking about how powerful our enemy is, but he's been conquered by the sacrifice of Jesus Christ and God robing himself in flesh, coming to this earth as a man, the Word made flesh, dwelt among us, And we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. And he died on the cross, and his blood is what empowers us and his spirit to do this, to tread on the lion and the adder, the young lion and the dragon, to trample them under our feet because of him and his sacrifice, which is really the point of this all of this, which is really what C.S. Lewis was trying to come to.
And right, and that goes back to the summary. It says, it's an engaging account of temptation, but not only temptation, it says, and triumph over it. So it's not a negative story at all. I mean, it does show you, you can defeat the devil.
And it's a different, it's like reverse teaching. It's looking at a very positive thing, the hope that we have in God, but casting it from the opposite side or in a negative light, showing us what the other side, or like what you're hearing from the enemy camp kind of thing, what they think. And obviously it can't all be quite accurate because we don't really know, although the Bible does say we are not ignorant of his devices, his particular methods we may not fully understand, but we're not ignorant of the way he tempts us, which is why C.S. Lewis was able to draw such a picture of it, because all he did was just sit down, really, and think about the things that we go through. If anybody did that, I mean, they'd come to some of these same conclusions, and some of it's opinion, but it's really a very awesome way of looking at temptation.
Well, we've talked a lot about the theological ramifications of the story, but let's focus a little bit on the technical side of things. The musical score was fabulous.
John Campbell.
John Campbell does it again.
Incredible, as usual. Par excellence.
The master.
The master of the keys. He should be called King of the Ivories.
You should contact Focus about that, conferring that new title up on him. That'd be good.
And I really liked the bonus tracks at the end, the Gresham and Lewis tracks. Kind of wrapped things up in a nice way. And, you know, kind of put the proverbial bow on the top.
The sound designers did an amazing job on the vocal effects for especially Andy Serkis. Some parts where he just screams at Wormwood or he just goes insane or whatever it is.
Typical devilish behavior.
They totally play on your imagination of what you think that would sound like, you know? I mean, you're sitting there listening to it and it actually comes out that devilish sound or however you would say that.
And Andy Serkis, by the way, was the one who played the character of Screwtape.
But from voice effects to even sound effects, I do not want to do a spoil alert here, but there is a particular scene where Screwtape is turning into something rather very unpleasant. You would have to listen to it for yourself, but the sound designers,
they unlock your imagination of how, what it would sound like for a demon to turn into this unpleasant thing, which we don't want to spoil, so you definitely want to go listen to this.
And along those lines, when Screwtape is looking for Wormwood in that one scene, and he's hiding in the pipe, the sound effects of him coming out of that pipe, I mean, it's just, it's great. It's great.
Along with that, or when Wormwood takes notes.
Yes, I love that. The scratching of, like, the flaming pen on the whatever he's writing on, like some stone tablet. Oh, even at the beginning, the very beginning, when C.S. Lewis, or the actor that plays C.S. Lewis, obviously it isn't him himself. If it was, then it would definitely be a very spooky production. But I would have some major questions. But when he is introducing towards the end of what he's saying, his voice starts sounding so weird. It's like impossible to describe. And it's a perfect lead-in to the story.
And speaking about the lead-in to the story, Radio Theater also used a different intro on Screwtape. Instead of the normal, they had this artist playing some song. You can hear this song as the song transitions into the story. The song is actually playing inside the club that the two men are standing in front of.
Well, the two demons.
Two demons, yes. Right.
Are, existing in front of. They're not really standing there, I guess.
Floating around and whatever.
Insubstantially existing in front of the pub or whatever. Something like that. And that kind of leads us into the humor of Screwtape. Because really, there are parts of it that are subtly but sarcastically humorous.
Yeah, and you have to listen closely or you might not catch a lot of the little snide remarks between Wormwood and Screwtape, but there are some others that are more obvious. For instance, when the letter catches on fire, I thought, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I'm sure that once you purchase this and listen to it, because Trust us, you definitely want to. It's very good. You will definitely pick up on probably the most obvious comedic scene in the entire thing. But we can't tell you what it is.
No,
you have
can't.
To listen to it.
Yes, you have to listen.
But you'll definitely notice what it is.
You mean when Screwtape offers Wormwood a spike for a chair?
Whoa.
No, not that one. I mean when the guy comes and does that one thing and it's really hilarious and we can't tell him about it because it would spoil, like, all of it. So
we'll move on then.
Yes, good idea.
It's already been mentioned, but Andy Serkis did a stupendous job of bringing that character of Screwtape alive. Almost too good of a job. I mean, if you're just hearing that in the background, or somebody else is listening to that and you happen to walk up and you hear, you're like, wow, that's pretty creepy.
There was an interview that Andy Serkis did with Focus on the Family, I believe, and he said that he would go home every day after playing this character and he would just be drained physically and emotionally because of the intensity of playing this role. And I can well imagine it after hearing his performance.
Yeah, I don't think I could ever do something like this.
That would have been a really cool thing to see, though, to be in the studio with Andy Serkis as he had to play some of those parts to actually feel the emotion that is coming across. I don't know. It might have been too scary to be in the studio.
Or doing the sound effects, even. Because some of the sound effects they did were also, like, really creepy, like we said before. So having to listen to that over and over again in the process of producing it, I don't know. Would have been an interesting time.
Going right back to Father Gilbert mysteries, I mean, focus on everything they do. Sometimes they get into those spooky areas, and that would be crazy doing sound design for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, there were a lot of firsts or new things that came along with this production. And something that was very new was that there were song tracks included in this project, a sort of a soundtrack to the production. It was a nice idea, I think, but I personally wasn't too particularly fond of any of the songs. What about you, Andrew?
Well, no, I didn't really care for any of the songs either, actually. They were just, I guess probably they seemed a little mediocre to me.
I think maybe a better approach would have been to kind of splice them throughout the dramas or use them as filler.
In the background, maybe?
Yeah, for the scenes that they pertained to. Each of the songs had a different theme, and you can listen to them and then pick out where in the storyline that song would have fit in. But I don't think they were the greatest quality. I mean, the production is good, you know, but lyrically, they did leave a little bit to be desired, I think. Well, let's talk about some of the highlights, some of the things that really stood out as far as the content is concerned. Letter 2... As you mentioned earlier, Andrew, it's divided into 31 letters from Screwtape to Wormwood. And letter 2, one of the things that stuck out to me was the distractions in church, how the devil can use other attendees to distract your attention, and not just your attention during the preaching, but your attention from God completely. And I thought it was a very accurate description of how that can happen, especially for a new convert.
We all know that we're not always at our best, and we make mistakes and all that. And so if you made a mistake at a time when someone who is a new convert saw it, then it just kind of gives the devil a little bit more opportunity to implant in the mind of the new convert, well, you know, these people are all just hypocrites. You saw what that guy did the other day or whatever. And until you get a little bit more maturity and understand that, I mean, everybody makes mistakes and we all get back up after those mistakes, that it can be a really effective tool, which is obviously why, I mean, it was placed in the Screwtape letters.
I realize it seems like we're talking a lot about the themes that Lewis addressed rather than the drama itself, but I think that's... I can't speak for Paul McCusker or Focus on the Family, but I think that's what they were trying to convey was the content of what C.S. Lewis was trying to get across rather than a big spectacular dramatization. Another thing that stood out to me was from letter 8, the troughs and peaks, the valleys and mountains, the trials and the cycles that we go through in our lives, how Satan and any demon can use those times to their advantage. Even though we may be on the mountaintop, there are some times that we may be more susceptible to certain temptations. And I thought that was a very compelling picture of how the devil could work and use those times.
examples in the Bible, too, of people being taken advantage of in both of those situations. The King Uzziah, King of Judah, when he had made himself strong, or when God really had made him strong, because that's what happened. God made him strong. When he was strong, he took too much on himself, and he did things that were too much, that were above his authority, that were out of his league, so he failed God in that way. And then, of course, there are other examples where people that were just in a low point in their lives, and they fell susceptible to other temptations that at other times in their lives they wouldn't have even dreamed of. And really, one thing that stood out to me a lot about, or one, I guess, example that Screwtape is using to tell Wormwood about the troughs and crests and the cyclical nature of human lives is when he said that the enemy, and in that he's referencing God, knew the best way to do it for his creation. We have the seasons that are different throughout the year, but they're the same every year. So it's kind of like the cycle of the same differentness, if I can say it that way. It's the same thing every year, but it's different throughout the year. So, and that's the way it is in our lives too. It happens in almost everything that we do. It's that way. And I think that Lewis really picked up on that, and that was really a really good point. That stood out a lot.
In letter 12, there was a particular quote that, as I was listening to it, I grabbed my pen and paper and wrote it down because it was so powerful. And again, keep in mind that this is coming from the perspective of a devil. So you got to kind of translate it in your mind, the phraseology, but I'm going to read it verbatim. It says, "It does not matter how small the sins are, provided that their cumulative effect is to edge the man away from the light and out into the nothing. Murder is no better than cards, if cards can do the trick. Indeed, the safest road to hell is the gradual one, the gentle slope, soft underfoot, without sudden turnings, without milestones, without signposts." And I was like, wow, that's very profound. And then from letter 16, another quote that I jotted down was, "Unless it is due to indifference, if a man can't be cured of church going, the next best thing is to send him all over the neighborhood looking for the church that suits him, until he becomes a taster or a connoisseur of churches." And again, I was just like, I cannot believe it. I mean, the insight that Lewis had, I mean, and this was years ago when he wrote these words, but it's still very true today. A lot of people, they don't like what the preacher preaches, or they don't like something, they don't like the way the choir sings, or whatever, and they don't look at the deeper issues. Does this church preach the truth?
They see religion and not a walk with God.
And they just, you know, well, I'm going to move on to the next one and see how that one works, you know? And we should not have that attitude. And in fact, that letter 16, if I'm not mistaken, was actually titled Church Hopping. And I thought it was very relevant to today. Well, then, of course, letter 31, the last letter, a fine culmination of the whole story. We don't want to give anything away for those who haven't read the book or haven't heard the drama yet, but it is phenomenal, the ending.
Yeah, another stellar performance by Andy Serkis at the very end.
I was crying, literally. It was so awesome to really think about what he was saying. It was incredible.
A very powerful ending.
And this was also something that you had to look at differently to really grasp how awesome it was. And I can't say too much about that because it'll kind of give it away. But you had to kind of step out of what we usually look for in the end of stories to really grasp how awesome the ending of the story, or the culmination of Screwtape's letters, really was.
Yeah, it was another one of those looking at things backwards from what we're normally used to. Now, I do apologize if this has been a little bit deep, this review. I mean, we did get into a lot of different topics, but the nature of this particular production calls for that type of approach. And like we said, there were a lot of firsts and a lot of new things in this drama. And so our approach has been a little bit different from most reviews that we will do on other dramas. But the Screwtape Letters is a very different type of production, a very different type of book. So that kind of necessitated the approach that we took to this review. We were actually able to speak with Paul regarding the Screwtape letters.
I wanted to ask, how did you reach the decision to dramatize this particular work, given its seemingly dramatization-unfriendly format, you know, the format of letters?
Well, yeah, it's funny. It's one of those things that was almost like Father Gilbert, where there was a vague idea that at some point suddenly had to become a reality. And years ago, we had talked about how to do the Screwtape letters, and if possible, to do it as a drama. And I had a vague idea of how I would do it, but because it kept getting pushed off, or for various reasons, we just didn't get to it, I didn't have to make that concrete. I didn't have to make it a reality. And so when it finally happened, I sat down and thought, oh my word, I've been talking about this for years, but now I actually have to figure out how to do it. And my vague idea, to be honest, was just simply, the vague notion would be I would look where there were dramatic moments within. In other words, Screwtape references the patient, references the patient's life. And I kept thinking, well, what we'll do is then come out of the letters and go into a dramatization of the scenes in the patient's life and then make real for the listening audience those moments. Well, it became clear that that in and of itself wasn't going to work because C.S. Lewis was operating not on that, always, he doesn't always operate in the letters with concrete examples.
Mm-hmm.
So then I had to step back and say, well, if it's not going to be that throughout, if I can only do that sparingly, how do I get to the heart of what Lewis is communicating through Screwtape's letters and kind of come at him sideways like he often did? Well, then it became a matter of, well, a lot of that can be done through Screwtape, not writing to Wormwood, but talking to Wormwood. And Wormwood would become us, the listeners, and hopefully be able to ask him the questions that if we were sitting with C.S. Lewis talking about Screwtape letters, or, heaven forbid, actually sitting and talking to Screwtape, these are the kinds of questions that would be asked because we don't understand or something needs to be explained. And so between those two ideas, it began to take shape in my mind about how to dramatize it. On one hand, in dialogue between Screwtape and Wormwood, and then actually going into the life and the lives of people, the human beings that they're talking about.
So what was the first step you took when you began to write the script? Did you read through the book a few times, or how did you approach that?
Well, I did. I went through and reread the book just to begin to formulate ideas. And then the breakthrough, in a way, was when I actually sat down and started to write. Because basically, I had to start somewhere. And I would have snippets of ideas for various letters and what they were dealing with. But there's that moment when you just can't stall anymore, and you have to sit down and do it. It's kind of like, I think it was the composer Ray Vaughan Williams who had said, you know, when he writes his symphonies, all he has to do is figure out the first 8 notes, and the rest of it's easy from there. And it felt like that to me. And the real moment when I thought I knew what I could do with this was when it opens up with Screwtape and Wormwood standing outside of the pub.
Mm-hmm.
And they begin their conversation. Screwtape wants to know why he's been summoned and why he's there. And then they go into the pub, and we meet the patient. And we actually meet a situation that I lifted from C.S. Lewis's life. A lot of the conversations that the patient had with other people, some of their debates and discussions, I actually lifted from events that Lewis chronicled in letters, or someone talked about how he was in a conversation with Lewis, and they talked about this, and Lewis said something that was funny or whatever. And that, to me, suddenly made it real. I suddenly got in my mind what this world was like, moving between the diabolical, satanic, demonic realm into our physical world, and what that could look like and feel like, and at times how funny that would be, as you find with some of the additional stuff that's just kind of throwaway humor, just to lighten things up a bit.
Now, what went into the decision to include songs in this project? That was a first for a radio theater drama.
Well, and I'll give credit for that to Philip Glassborough, who we work closely with in England. He's not only a writer and director for us, but he's also the one who finds this amazing talent that we get to work with. And Philip is, he loves music, and he loves musical theater. And so there isn't a project that we've done where he hasn't tried to put music in. It's probably the best way to put it. I mean, if he could have, everything would have been a musical in some form. If you go back even as far back as Bonhoeffer, which was essentially our second project, there's a little song in there that Philip wrote. And so from the get-go, he always comes at us with music. What's the music going to be? Or here's a song, or should we do songs? Finally, with Screwtape, it actually seemed to make sense, the idea of doing songs inspired by Screwtape letters. And we then went ahead and commissioned Philip, and Philip did it in close cooperation with Dave Arnold as our executive producer, going through finding artists who were willing to do it, and then selecting the songs and using them. That was fun. Whether or not it's appropriate or for this project or for any other project, I don't know. I suppose the listeners will have to let us know about that. But it helped add to the sort of difference of the project, the dynamic that existed in doing this specific project.
And that was one of the things that we pointed out, too, is that it's very, very different from anything else that you guys have ever done.
Yeah. And it had to be. I mean, with the world of Narnia, of course, we're dealing with talking animals, but Lewis was very clear that Narnia was a lot like our world. So in terms of sound design, in terms of how it was crafted and put together, it had overlaps. Well, Screwtape was very different because now we weren't dealing with a fantasy world that's kind of like our world. We were actually now dealing with a spiritual realm that we had to figure out what that sounded like. How do you evoke the right things, but without scaring the living daylights out of your audience? I mean, the danger, too, was it could become oppressive to listen to after a while if you stay with a certain type of thing. And a lot of the credit for that goes to Nate Jones, who threw himself wholeheartedly into trying to create sonically that world, all the worlds, because when you think of it, they're actually in three or four different domains. There's the hellish one, and then there's the so-called real world that we live in. But then there's this sort of in-between where Screwtape and Wormwood are in our world, but very clearly they're not physically manifested where they can be seen or heard by the other characters. And to actually do that with sound and music is a testimony to Nate's talent.
Thanks for the behind-the-scenes look at the making of Screwtape, Paul.
And now for our interview with Nathan Hubler. Today we're talking with Nathan Hubler, writer, producer, and director for Adventures in Odyssey. Nathan, I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us today.
Oh, no problem. I always love talking about Odyssey.
Now, you've written many different genres of shows for Adventures in Odyssey. Adventure, suspense, biblical themes. Do you have a favorite type of script that you enjoy writing more than others?
Well, I do enjoy working on all different genres, and that's one of the great things about Odyssey is that you get to do all kinds of different stories. But I do have to say my favorite to write probably are the intrigue and suspense shows. For one, they're so much fun to brainstorm, to work out the details of those as a group and kind of talk through the different scenes and the cliffhangers and the plot points. But also they're a lot of fun to write, and I think our listeners really enjoy them. At the same time, I'm glad we don't do those all the time, because I think those would quickly take over the show and kind of spin the show in a different direction. But it's really fun to do them when we have them. Take It From the Top Floor is probably my favorite episode to work on that I've done so far. On the other hand, one of the biblical episodes that I worked on, Bernard and Job, was certainly the easiest episode to write. Because with a lot of our shows, we go through a lot of drafts and we work on the projects real collaboratively. And somebody will come and say, well, this motivation of this character doesn't work for me, or this scene doesn't make sense. Whereas when we're writing a biblical show, it's a little harder for them to come and say, you know, I don't think Samuel would actually do this, or I don't think King Saul would actually, this doesn't seem within his character because it's already written that way. So I thought that biblical shows were the easiest, and then I worked on Bernard and Jeremiah, and that ended up being one of the hardest shows. So I didn't think that they were so easy anymore.
You mentioned in a recent interview that you've been busy with other focus projects lately and haven't really been writing much. And on album 51, you were credited on only one episode, A Game for a Mystery, as director. Can you tell us anything about the other projects that you've been working on?
Sure. I've gotten to do a lot of different things, and that's one of the great things about my job is that on any given day, I could be doing a whole list of different things. I could be one of the big projects I work on is the podcast, and that's both audio and video. So setting up interviews, coming up with questions, recording those, working with our freelancers who edit those podcasts, or is some of them I'll edit myself. Some of them are video projects, so we'll actually need to set up the lighting and set up the sound for that and edit that together. So I get to actually be a video writer and a video director and a video editor as part of my job too. For this last album, I did a lot of work on the raps for the show, working with the writers and the raps and also editing those raps. Something I did for the last recording session, which was kind of an interesting puzzle, was figuring out how to schedule the different actors, because we're going to get to album 53 here in just a minute, but it had a pretty big cast for that album, and figuring out when everyone was able to come in, working around everyone's schedules and trying to make it so one person didn't have to come in for one scene at 9 a.m. and then wait around all day until they did another scene at 5 p.m. So that was an interesting puzzle, trying to figure all that out. Also, I love doing tours when people come in, fans come in to focus on the family. I give tours sometimes, and that's very fun for me. And another thing that I wrote down here when I was trying to think of all the different things I get to do are crowd recordings is another thing that you wouldn't think of, but that's something that we have to figure out how to do. If there's a scene that has a bunch of people reacting to something, then a lot of times then I'll help set up the crowd recording for that. So I'll figure out who needs to come in, what age groups they need to be, how many people need to come in, and try and work with the sound designer to get that recorded. And then I mentioned working with the sound designer. All of these things that I get to do are real collaborative. So the video projects, I have a lot of people helping me on those, interns and also other people who work here. Kevin has helped me with some of the video projects recently. And so all the things that I get to do are real collaborative, and that's part of the fun.
In reference to the crowd recordings, are those just visitors to focus that you use for those?
We sometimes will do that. Sometimes we'll have a group coming in, like there'll be maybe a homeschool group or a group from a local school that comes in, and we'll see that on the schedule and we'll use them for a crowd recording. Other times it'll be groups of employees or groups of students from the Focus Institute or even friends that we know. There's also, for the last couple of albums, we've had a local theater troupe who's helped us out with the crowd recordings, because sometimes guests of Focus are very outgoing and very excited to be part of a crowd recording, and other times they're excited but they're just a little overwhelmed, and so it's hard for them to get into the part while they're so overwhelmed about being in the studio. So that's part of the challenge of recording a crowd scene, is just getting the right people in the room to make that crowd scene happen.
We noticed that Marshall Younger was credited as a writer on one of the episodes in Album 51, Target of the Week, and he's also credited as a writer on a few episodes of Album 52. Were these written before he left Focus, or is he still writing for Odyssey as a freelancer?
No, Marshall's still writing for Odyssey as a freelancer. One of the great things about Odyssey that I think, certainly on the writing side, is that it seems like no one's ever truly gone. I mean, people will leave for different reasons for a period of time, but then they'll still come back to the show because it's been going on for so long. There'll be periods of time where people are busy with other projects and they can't write. And Marshall's not on staff with Odyssey anymore, but he's still able to write for us. I was just reading an outline that he wrote just last week that's probably going to be a part of album 55. So he's still very much a part of the writing team for the show, even though he's not on staff.
Now, you mentioned album 55. How far in advance do you start planning out for each album?
It depends on the album sometimes. Album 53 came together fairly quickly, and it was we kind of moved the schedule around just a little bit to accommodate album 53. It was originally going to be this 12-part story arc was originally going to be album 54. Then we moved it back to number 53. But in general, we're probably about a year out from what you're hearing on the radio, or maybe even in the case of 55 that we're just starting to work on it now. I guess we're a year and a half out from what you're hearing on the radio. We just finished recording album 53 last week, or I guess it'd be week before last now. So we're maybe 6 months ahead of what you're hearing on the radio for recording, and anywhere from a year to a little more ahead on the writing side.
There were a lot of changes that came to Odyssey in Album 51, a lot of new characters. Did you have any role in the development of any of the new characters that were introduced in Album 51?
Yeah. We tried to develop the characters in 51 in a somewhat unusual way. We're always, throughout the history of the show, certainly the 10 years that I've been here, and even before that, the Odyssey team was always developing new characters. We had a lot of new characters in 51, and we tried a little bit different approach to developing them. Dave Arnold and Marshall Younger and I went out to California, I believe, twice for audition sessions where we would just bring in actors and have them perform different characters for us. And out of that, we created several other characters in albums 51 and 52. Mrs. Adelaide, who is in Stage Fright and also probably going to be in some episodes in album 54, she was born out of a voice that one of the actors who came in, one of the characters that she did kind of led to the character of Mrs. Adelaide. Another one of them was Red Hollard, who we heard this guy's voice and developed the character around him. Others of the characters, like most of the Parker family, were developed pretty specifically before we actually had an actor in mind for them. But some of the actors' voices certainly led to characters. And then once we had the characters that we wanted to create, we auditioned several different actors, and we'd audition them over the phone. And then actually for some of the members of the Parker family, and I believe also the members of the Jones family, I'm trying to remember specifically, but we auditioned them together. Like we'd audition several different pairs of husbands and wives together just to see how their chemistry was. And that's really crucial in the studio, is that you might have a great actor, but for one reason or another, they just don't have the chemistry with another actor. And so we wanted to get a husband and wife who had great chemistry, sisters who had good chemistry, Olivia and Matthew, we wanted to have great chemistry. And so we did a lot of upfront work on developing those characters. Now, character development is something that really never stops. And so even now, we've developed a lot of these new characters, but we're trying to figure out which ones are actually going to continue. There are some characters who show up on the show who are there for a few episodes and then kind of fade away because they weren't, you know, they just didn't seem like characters that who needed to continue for dozens of episodes. And then obviously there are others who catch on and people really like, and we love writing for them, and the actors are just perfect, and we want to continue those characters for many, many episodes. And that's what we're trying to figure out now as we're continuing with these new episodes, are which of these characters are going to be the ones who last, and which ones are going to be around for a few episodes and maybe they'll fade off and just be around occasionally.
Does Focus pay any attention to the feedback that's posted on these various AIO fan websites as far as characters that listeners like or reviews of episodes? I know there's a lot of sites out there and many people are very active on those sites. Does Focus take any of that into consideration?
Absolutely. I think one of the biggest fallacies about writing is when you'll hear writers say, well, I only write for myself and I don't pay attention to what anyone else says. And there might be some writers out there who can do that, but I think that's a very poor way to reach an audience. With Adventures in Odyssey, we've always tried to be real attentive to what the audience is saying about the shows and what they're thinking and feeling and how the shows are impacting them. That's why we give the address at the end of every episode. And so we take listener feedback very seriously. Now, that's not to say that every letter that we get, we're going to take their advice, because we can't please everybody and every suggestion that they have. But we certainly take feedback into account. Let me give you an example just to address some of the feedback that we've gotten just in recent days. Album 51 was definitely a learning experience for us. And you know, you might think that since Adventures in Odyssey has been on the air for 23 years, we would know exactly how to do the show and we'd never make any mistakes. Well, obviously that's not true, because we're human and so we all make mistakes. And with Album 51 going into it, the idea was, we thought, let's, you know, take everything that we want to change about Odyssey and change it all at the same time, because we wanted to change the theme song. We wanted to do some tweaks on the cover art. We wanted to do some tweaks with characters and so on and so on. And also, obviously, with Mr. Whitaker, we had to make that change as well. And we thought the best thing to do would be to change all that at the same time, that we would let fans know that we were going to make these changes, and then they'd be excited about seeing the new version, I suppose, of Adventures in Odyssey. And certainly the feedback that we've gotten is that people didn't like all that change at once, you know, that it just felt like too much change at one time. And so that was a lesson for us, that we thought, you know, we probably should have spaced that out over a longer period of time, made the transition to new voices, new characters, new artwork, theme song, and all that over a period of time instead of having it all at once. And so that's something that fans have communicated pretty clearly to us about the change, and something we've certainly taken to heart.
Looking ahead to album 53, The Green Ring Conspiracy, is this another album-long story arc, or will there be some standalone episodes on this album?
Well, to answer that, I'm prepared to reveal the episode titles for The Green Ring Conspiracy. And so you heard it here first. The episodes in The Green Ring Conspiracy are titled The Green Ring Conspiracy Part 1, The Green Ring Conspiracy Part 2, The Green Ring Conspiracy Part 3, and you can probably guess the other 9. We just got finished recording those, like I said, maybe about 10 days ago, and I think that fans will really enjoy this album. I think they'll also, just not jumping ahead of album 52, I think they're going to enjoy a lot of album 52 as well. I've gotten some feedback so far. 52 has just come out in the last couple of weeks, but it seems like people have been responding pretty positively to the episodes in there, and I think that even though the change of album 51 was tough because there were so many changes at once, like I mentioned before, that it just seemed like so many things were changing, I think that when people hear 52, they'll be reassured that, hopefully they'll be reassured that Odyssey's still on the right track.
Well, I can speak on behalf of the three of us. We all went out and purchased album 52 the day that it was released and it was available in stores. And I have to say that overall, we were all very pleased with the outcome of this project. I had heard somewhere that this was going to be a more traditional Adventures in Odyssey album, and I definitely think it was. You got a little bit more used to the new characters in this album. Overall, I think album 52 is phenomenal.
Sure. Well, I really appreciate hearing that. And we appreciate, you were asking about how much we take feedback into account, and we appreciate all feedback. We appreciate negative feedback as well, but we certainly love hearing, you know, from people when they have comments on the show, whatever they are.
Is there any other upcoming Odyssey news that you can share with our listeners? We did talk a little bit about album 53, but other than that, is there anything else coming down the pike for Odyssey?
Well, you know about the Imagination Station books that we've just announced here not long ago, and so we're pretty excited about that, this new series for a little bit younger listeners, kind of maybe a gateway product to Adventures in Odyssey that you can get started if there are kids out there who are a little too young to start listening to the radio shows. Maybe they can't quite pay attention for the full length of a radio show. Then these Imagination Station books might be something that can kind of get them into the world, get them hooked on Odyssey. Also, obviously, we have album 52 that's just come out. And I think that has a number of really fun episodes in it.
Well, Nathan, I want to thank you again for taking the time to talk with me today.
Thanks for the invite to chat, and I'm always happy to chat about Odyssey and anxious to hear what you guys are going to say on future episodes of the podcast. So definitely know that if you're writing on a blog or writing on a message board or doing a podcast, that we're definitely listening.
Before we wrap up this episode, there are some people that we would like to thank.
That's right, Roy. There have been many people who have been generous enough to help us spread the word about ATC, and we really appreciate it.
First of all, we wanted to thank Jacob at the Odyssey Scoop for the post he wrote and the link he put on that site.
We also want to thank Mary from the blog Classic Mary Moments.
Also, the Odyssey Times blog for their post about ATC, and Ashley for linking us on her blog. And lastly, we want to thank our listeners.
Oh yes, that's beautiful. Oh, I'm starting to get choked up. Can we please move on?
Sure, Andrew. Wrap it up for us, man.
Okay. Well, that brings us to the end of another episode of ATC. Be sure to stop by our website, www.audiotheatercentral.com.
We'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you think of the podcast. You can send your questions, comments, or remonstrations to ATC@audiotheatercentral.com.
We really do want to hear from you. Next episode, we'll stop by the mailroom and read some of your letters. So don't forget to write. We'll see you next time, everybody.
Audio Theater Central is a production of Radio CSS and is recorded at the Radio CSS studios in Phoenix, Arizona. Today's script was written by Jack Carlson. The episode was produced by Roy Lee at Axe 2 for You Studios. Executive producer was Jack Carlson.
We have a